We continue our look at the Psalms and their variety. Last time we took a look at the individual laments, noticing how many, many, many of the Psalms express difficulty, express tough times, express those moments of our lives when we don't know where to turn or we find ourselves helpless in the face of overwhelming obstacles. Today we're going to take a look at communal laments, which are cries of the community. We have often very individual expressions of pain and suffering and sorrow. But we also have times in our lives and in our social experiences where the cries come not just from us, but from all those around us. And that's what we're going to take a look at today. Remember that in this particular understanding of the Psalms, I suggest there are 8 different kinds of Psalms, and we're going to take a separate opportunity to look at each one of those. But for today, the communal laments. They are similar to the individual laments in that they're cries in times of distress. The unique factor here separating them from the individual laments is that in each case here, the voice is that of the community, not just of the individual. I often have my own experiences of life. I always have my own experiences of life. You do too. But there are times when the experiences of life transcend my limited perspective or experiences, when we collectively experience something. We get a sense of that maybe with the Olympics, when nations begin to say, yeah, we did it, when not only most of the people in that country didn't do a thing, but watched a particular athlete achieve some great feat. We do that sometimes with sports teams where our team wins and not your team, and we're really not out there on the field playing. We have that sometimes in political elections where people align themselves by virtue of their political relationship with various parties. And so one team wins and another team loses, and there's a sense of hopelessness that sometimes goes along with that. That's a little bit alike of what communal laments are. Perhaps more strikingly come those times when there is such a large calamitous disaster that a nation or a collective as a whole needs to voice its difficulties. It certainly was true in the United States after September 11, 2001, when there was a collective sense of anguish about the bombings of the plane smashing into the World Trade Center towers and the Pentagon. There was a sense of national grief at a time like that. There was something of the same when the hurricane slammed into the southern coast of the United States, Hurricane Katrina, or when the tsunami overwhelmed so many of the communities of Southeast Asia, or when certain planes have been shot out of the skies, or bombs have gone off, or a large number of people have died in an earthquake. And whole communities or nations, certainly certain segments of Earth's population, suddenly become sorrowful and upset and experience this sense of loss and a gripping concern about what's meaningful or where does meaning derive in times like this. That's what the communal laments are about. Now, there aren't as many of these in the book of Psalms as there are the individual laments. In my own reading of the Psalms, I find them in Psalm 60, 74, 79, 80, 90, 108, 123, and 137. We'll look at a couple of these. Psalm 60 is a powerful one. Notice the variety of things stated in the title, including expressions of how the psalm is itself to be sung or performed in the context of worship. Notice the opening lines. You have rejected us, God, and burst upon us. You have been angry. Now restore us. That's the essence of the message in just one couplet of parallelism. There's a tragedy that's taken place. It's beyond measure. It's beyond comprehension. obviously there have to be designs to the universe, and somehow this fits into them, but it doesn't make sense right now. And if God is powerful and we still believe God is powerful, then somehow God is related to this tragedy. You have rejected us and burst upon us. You have shaken the land and torn it open. Mend its fractures, for it is quaking. You have shown your people desperate times. You have given us wine that makes us stagger. There's a sense in which we've been forced to drink something, so we become senseless with what's going on. We do not know what's happening around us. And the psalm continues to express those horrible ideas, those expressions of tragedy, of suffering. But notice how it comes round and turns to something else. It begins to question these things. In verse 10, is it not you, God, you who have now rejected us and no longer go out with our armies? Give us and aid against our enemy, for human help is worthless. We know that we are helpless. We know that somehow you have allowed this to happen, but allow us now also to see your other side. With God, we will gain the victory, and he will trample down our enemies. Those are some powerful words with which the psalm concludes. Notice again these kinds of things. The psalm in its title is directly connected to difficulties in the time of the life of David. Somehow things are going awry. This may have been at the time when the armies were running in front of the Philistines. They were the major enemy during those times. As I had said in another section, we do not know what the Hebrew word miktam means, but we do know that all of the songs in which miktam appears in the title are Psalms of David and Psalms of Distress. So we have a fair sense that miktam is related to some cry for deliverance or overwhelming sense of grief or subdued reflection. Maybe it's the kind of somber note by which the psalm ought to be performed. Maybe a minor key rather than a major key. We don't know for sure, but that is related. So if you see miktam in the title of a psalm, you can quite be sure that this is related to some time of difficulty in its writing and some somber reflections on the meaning of this distress. As the great connection made between the difficult fortunes of Israel in battle and the sense of divine judgment, remember that for Israel and for Yahweh, there was an inseparable union between the nation and the faith. Since the time of Jesus, we have understood our faith to be separated from attachments to any particular country, that Christianity is spread throughout all nations, and that Christianity is not to be understood as confined to or more pronounced in one nation than any other nation. But not so with Israel. In Israel's time, Israel was nationally the expression of God's care and connection with the nations. And so what happens with Israel is somehow a reflection of Israel's very relationship with Yahweh. And David expresses that in this psalm. Note also the concluding confidence. It's the case with the individual laments, except not so pronounced in that one of Heman the Ezrahite. But here again, God has heard and God will certainly help. Another expression of individual laments, Psalm 80. Here there's it's a psalm of Asaph, so it's not during the days of David. It's much later in Israel's history. But notice how the psalm begins. O God, the nations have invaded your inheritance. They have defiled your holy temple. They have reduced Jerusalem to rubble. Is this at the time of Jeremiah when the city of Jerusalem was actually destroyed? Or is it one of those times earlier when invaders came in and did much damage to the city but did not displace the people as a whole? There is certainly a lot of battle imagery in this psalm, and it happened at a time when other forces from other countries actually came into the land of Palestine. They have left the dead bodies of your servants as food for the birds of the sky, the flesh of your own people for the animals of the wild. Notice again there the parallelism that takes place. They have poured out blood like water all around Jerusalem, and there is no one to bury the dead. We the objects of contempt to our neighbors, of scorn and derision to those around us. Again, parallelism, but now about some pretty nasty things of life. How long, Lord, will you be angry forever? How long will your jealousy burn like fire? Pour out your wrath on the nations that do not acknowledge you and on the kingdoms that do not call on your name. Notice the parallelism again. For they have devoured Jacob and devastated his homeland. Parallelism all the way through. Notice how the psalm has shifted from the expressions of horror at the after effects of war and battle into this kind of, now what do we do? And then it shifts again about verse 9. Help us, God, our Savior. Now God is not merely our God, but the one who saves us and the one who rescues us. For the glory of your name, deliver us and forgive our sins for your name's sake. Maybe we've done wrong. Maybe you're justified in allowing this to happen to us. But remember that we are tied to your honor. And so what happens to us is a reflection on you as well. Notice the next couple of lines. Why should the nation say, where is their God? In other words, even if this is justified because we have forgotten you or we have been less than in tune with your ways and your will, somehow we are in covenant together and your fortunes and your future is connected here on earth with the manner in which you work among us and with us. Before our eyes make known the nations, says the psalmist, that you avenge the outpoured blood of your servants. May the groans of the prisoners come before you. With your strong arm preserve those condemned to die. Pay back into the laps of our neighbors seven times the contempt that they have hurled at you, Lord. Not just at us, but because they have hurled it at us, you also are tarnished. Then we, your people, the sheep of your pasture, will praise you forever. You've heard that line before. From generation to generation, we will proclaim your praise. Note these things. Israel's idea of blessing is tied to its inheritance in the land of Canaan. Fleeing before conquering nations is considered to be part of the curses of the Sinai covenant that actually kick in when the people are unfaithful to God. So there's a reason why these things are happening to us. But God's very honor is at stake in the outcome of the conflict. So the people are certain that God will turn things around and bring them a victory. Still in the middle of it, they cry out together. It's a communal lament. A third example of these communal laments is Psalm 137. This comes from very late in Israel's history, from the time when the Babylonians have in fact overwhelmed the city of Jerusalem, destroyed the temple, and have taken many people captive back to Babylon. By the rivers of Babylon we sat and wept when we remembered Zion. There on the poplars we hung our harps, for there our captors asked us for songs. Our tormentors demanded songs of joy. They said, sing us one of the songs of Zion. Well, how can we sing the songs of the Lord while in a foreign land? So there's this sense of frustration. I want to live my faith in a meaningful way, but everything about my faith right now is shattered and uncertain. But then comes this idea, may that my tongue cling to the roof of my mouth if I do not remember you, if I do not consider Jerusalem my highest joy. Remember, O Lord, what the Edomites did on that day that Jerusalem fell. Tear it down, they said, tear it down to its foundations. And now they're looking for payback of the people of God. But notice the movement of the psalm. We are living at a distance from our homeland because others have taken over because we sinned. Now it's up to us to learn again what it means to be the people of God. And in our remembering, maybe restoration will come. This psalm certainly dates from late in Israel's existence, the Babylonian exile, which began in 586 BC. The alienation from the land of promise is an indication of God's judgment against the people, but even living in an alien environment, God's people do not have to imagine themselves forgotten or lacking the watchful care of their God. Still, the unique practices of the people of God separate them from other religious groups and cultures and make them stand out. That's why they cannot sing songs of Zion, and we'll get into the songs of Zion later on, in this circumstance where the culture itself only laughs at it. Others taunt and persecute them. Now, it's important here to think about Zion. The word Zion comes, and you'll see the word Zion often throughout the Old Testament, and especially in the Psalms. It becomes the code name for God's dwelling on earth. Now, of course, physically represented by God's dwelling is the temple in Jerusalem. But Zion stands for that kind of larger sense of God's presence. So it can mean not just the throne of God or the temple of God or Jerusalem. It can mean, in fact, the entirety of Palestine, of Canaan, of the people of God, wherever they are. So Zion becomes this larger code term for where God lives and God lives with us. Remembering and the faith and faith and faithfulness are all part of the same package. We lose our sense of confidence in God when we remember what God has done in the past. Then we're left just to the wiles and disappointments of the moment. If we remember how God has promised and acted, we can look toward the future, even in our distress, with a much greater sense of confidence. And that's part of the outcome of all of the communal laments. Difficult songs, but important songs for us to sing. We live in a world that often thinks of worship as mostly songs of praise and prayers of thanks, but laments help us remember our own needs and our failures, and they give voice to the cries of communities that transcend individual experiences. They keep us focused on segments of society that are inherently lacking access to justice and positions of influence. Who right now, even if you're singing a song of praise, might be crying out an individual or communal lament? You need to hear that. I need to hear that. Communal laments arise from the devastations that are much larger and more critical than simply one person's misfortunes. And they also indicate that we share each other's grief as we share each other's faith. Powerful songs. Songs not to be missed in the collection of the Psalms. More on these things, of course, in my meditations on the Psalms, Hear Me, O God, and also background in covenant documents. They may be very helpful to you.